behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Boland.
Ben, today's topic is another question of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a topic that should not be taken lightly by anybody.
Oh, no. If this is an impulse decision, you're doing it wrong.
Definitely. Yeah, there's a big question out there when you get to the end of your car's life, I guess, or when you think you've gotten to the end of your car's
life.
Is it time to replace that car? You know, should you buy a new car? Should you buy a new to you used car? You know, what should you do? Or should you hang on to that old car? Is it worth it to hang on to the old car just to save some more money in the meantime?
Right. And there's a great question here that a lot of people don't consider all the angles to when they first start grappling with it. Because consider, we've all been there, or we at least all know somebody who's been at the point with a car that they've owned for several years where they say, you know, now it seems like every time I get something fixed, something else breaks, you know, and even if you work on your car yourself, you're going to incur increasing costs for a car where everything is just starting to fail, you know?
Exactly. We're going to get to all of this, I promise. And I do want to state that we are not going to really talk specific numbers because it varies so greatly for everybody.
Right, yeah.
What you're able to afford, what your vehicle's worth, what the new vehicle will cost, the mileage and all that. You know, everything is very specific to you. But we will talk some general numbers as far as like national averages and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll try to make some sense out of all this as we go through and tell you how to make a reasonably informed decision about this, because, you know, eventually it'll come down to really your desire, whatever you really want to do. I mean, when we get to the very end of it, it'll be kind of up to you, but we can maybe try to guide you along the way here.
Right. We can give you some principles for sure. So, one of the first biggest questions when you're sitting there with your car that has been a pretty good car, but let's say you've been driving it an average number of times and stuff, and now you're at the point where it seems like you're doing a number of repairs every month.
So you've got average mileage.
You've got average mileage.
But you've owned it for many, many years.
Sure.
And it's above 100,000 miles.
It's past the 100K.
Yeah, a lot of people see that as like the sell point. I've heard that from many
people.
Isn't
that weird?
You know, before it gets to 100,000, I'm going to sell this car and get another one. That's maybe not the best strategy, as we'll find out.
No, sir.
So, yeah, there's a lot of people that are hanging on to cars right now that they're putting a fair amount of money into it each month for repairs, and they're wondering, is that what I should be doing? Well, maybe they should look at, you know, kind of what the general older car cost would be, I guess,
this
if you want to look at it that
way.
And then maybe we can compare that with what some of the general new car costs are, because people don't seem to think about new car costs other than the initial payment or the initial purchase price. And I don't think that's the right way to look at this. So, you know, when we look at older car costs, you're thinking mainly three things because you've paid it off, right? It's
right. It's yours. You own it.
Yeah, we're assuming that, you know, you're beyond the part where, you know, you're making the monthly payment and it's your vehicle. Mm-hmm. You own the car. You're paying for, you know, when the brakes go bad, you're buying that. Whenever the belt gets thrown off of there, you're paying for the new belt repair.
You're paying for insurance, but your insurance is likely going to be cheaper due to the age of the car.
Exactly. That's one of the three things. So you've basically got fuel costs, you've basically got insurance costs, and maintenance costs.
Mm-hmm.
And those three things are what you're pretty much paying for a used car all the time. Your old car.
Right.
All the time. So, you know, you hang on to it past the point where you're paying for it each month, and that's what you're paying. Now, you know, roughly, I guess these are roughly the same for a new car too, the fuel and insurance costs. Insurance costs, as you mentioned, Ben, they go up a little bit for a new car.
Right.
For an older car, as your car depreciates a bit, you know, in value, the insurance company realizes that and they say, well, you know, you shouldn't be paying each month for that as much as you were for it when it was newer, even 1 year newer. So every year you'll see an incremental drop to a point, I think. And then they kind of halt that.
But, right.
Maintenance costs. Now that's the main factor, I think, to consider when you're talking about an older car, like what we're considering here. So an older car, the main factor would be, you know, like monthly repairs versus a new monthly car payment.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to a brand new vehicle, which, you know, you've got to look at that monthly payment, of course, unless you're, you know, I guess in a position where you can pay cash for a car, and we'll get to that as well. But not a whole lot of people do that.
Well,
some do, but.
Okay, I love that you did this, that you introduced this comparison. That has to be made. And this is one of the most crucial factors in determining whether you should continue repairing your current car or buy a new or, what do they call it? Certified pre-owned.
Oh yeah. New to you used car, right?
New to you.
Like certified pre-owned. That's a whole different ballgame. Should we just tell them right now what that is?
Yeah.
A certified pre-owned vehicle is one that will often come with a warranty, which is a pretty good deal, really.
Yep.
And that's what sets that apart from just a pre-owned vehicle that you might buy in a lot where it's like as is. You know, you drive off the lot and it's your responsibility.
Right. Certified pre-owned comes with a certain guarantee for the quality of the vehicle.
A manufacturer's guarantee, which is a big deal.
Not crazy Eddie on Second Avenue used cars.
Yeah, exactly. So those certified pre-owned commercials that we're seeing everywhere now.
Yeah, from like BMW and stuff.
They actually have some kind of meaning behind them. There's some backing there if you want to think about it that way. So I'm sorry, Ben. I didn't mean to go off on
a
side
tangent. That's
a great
point. So what I'd like to do right now are two things if you're okay with it. First, something that we should have said in the beginning, buddy, and I can't believe we missed it.
What's that?
We have a great podcast on the cost of ownership, and it's an old one. It's a deep cut. But if you are considering buying a new car, repairing your current car now, then you really should check out that podcast because it has some, reassuring news and some ugly truth.
Yeah, that's true. I think, oh yeah, the ugly truth part about that. I think I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the timetables.
Mostly. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, I think we were on new car costs. Right.
New car costs.
We talked about old car costs, you know, keeping your old car.
Right.
Versus new car costs. And new car costs, now a lot of people think of just the initial, you know, I'm going to the dealership and I got to put a down payment on this thing and I've got to, you know, pay this monthly fee. And, you know, we'll talk about monthly fees in just a minute. Rather charges. But, you're going to have less maintenance to deal with. You're going to have a little bit more insurance to deal with and potentially less fuel costs. But you got to remember that along with that purchase cost, you're also going to have taxes, title, licensing fees, things like that, and possibly loan interest if you do have to take a loan out for this vehicle.
I am so glad you said that. I read this great article by these guys called the Motley Fools, who work with different microeconomic or individual economic decisions. And they had this great look, at whether you should buy a new car or maintain your old one. And if it's okay, I just want to walk through their example real quick.
Sure.
Okay. So they looked at a place called Comerica Bank, and that's the creator of the Auto Affordability Index.
Okay, so what's that, Ben?
Okay, so the Auto Affordability Index is something where you can find the average prices of all types of different makes of vehicles, years of vehicles, and it's broken down by multiple categories. So looking at this, at the number they found, just to pick an example out of the air, the average cost of a light vehicle would be like 25.5.
Really?
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's an older number.
Yeah, it is an older number, and I'll update that in just a minute. But go ahead with your example.
Yeah, I'm setting you up for this because this is an outdated number just for this example. So let's say you had to finance that because you couldn't pay for the car with cash, which we'll mention later, right? So you had to have some interest. And let's say your interest was just a little over 6.5%.
Okay.
Which is not too bad, but that would cost you $605.44 a month. All right. Now, if you're driving a vehicle that's costing you $200 a month to repair, then it's still saving you money.
That's clear. It's an easy choice there.
Right. I mean, to make those repairs.
You're saving $400 every month potentially by holding on to that old car.
Right. Now, also there's going to be a cost to you in time and convenience because you have to work on this car every month.
Yeah, and I guess you can extrapolate that to if, you know, 1 month you go without a $200 repair, and then the next month you go without another $200 repair, and then the next month it's $600 to repair. That happens occasionally, but, you know, you got to look at it that you had 2 months off there. And that's the way you got to look at this. And you got to look at it, you know, the math of the whole thing. And that's where, you know, a lot of this comes in, like, are you saving money versus what you would pay for a new car? Because you got to have a new car in mind when you start working out the math on this, because I mean, it can range anywhere from, you know, you may buy a new vehicle, new to you, used vehicle that's $12,000 or $10,000, or you may want to get a used vehicle that is, you know, $35,000, and or you might want to get a brand new vehicle that's $50,000, you know, and then you've got to figure out all these different formulas and what works best for you and what you're paying for that old used car each month. And that's where it becomes critical. Like, should you hang on to it? But there's more to it than just that. I mean, people buy new cars for a lot of different reasons. They buy, they buy them for comfort, for style, image, safety, convenience, reliability, things like that.
I mean, one of the examples that you and I talk about, or we've talked about a couple times off air, would concern some of our friends who are realtors, you know, or who are attorneys and, we're not going to name names because I'm not sure if some of my buddies might be listening to this episode, but you and I have friends who say that because of their job, they need to always have a really nice new looking car. And it doesn't matter if it's a well-maintained car from, you know, 98 or 2003, because what they need to have to maintain their appearance is a car from at least 2011.
And see, now that makes sense to me in that case, because if you're driving clients all over town to show them new homes or property or whatever it happens to be, you definitely do have to have, you have to portray that image. You have to have that professional image, that successful image. You know, what is this guy doing? He's trying to sell me $1 million piece of property in the middle of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And he's driving around in a $5,000 used, you know, I don't know, Toyota Tacoma or something. You know, like, what's going on with this? We're having to sit on each other's laps to get to the property. That's not right.
But so, if he's in a leased Escalade, which again, I still think is a terrible idea.
we'll see. It's all about the image or a new Mercedes, you know, something like that.
Definitely.
Mean, it all plays into that big shot persona that they want to have, that they actually kind of need to have in order to make the deal go through. And for some, you know, for some people, I think that's really, really important. It's a good idea.
And there's another thing that is a non quantifiable or non-numerical interest that I would add here, but I'm going to wait till the end to drop it. Is that cool?
Oh, that's fine. And you know, we mentioned paying cash for cars, right?
Yes.
And I don't know if a lot of people really have ever done this, really. I mean, in our audience, I know a lot of people claim to have done this and say, like, well, I just paid cash for that car, but buying a brand new car now, and the average price of a new car is something like, and this is a relatively new number,
okay.
So you mentioned 25 before.
But that was a few years back.
Well, actually, it wasn't that far back, because in 1 year, I believe, this price has gone up something like $5,000. In 1 year. I think it's 1 year. Let me double check that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. $5,000 in the last 10 years.
Okay.
So, it's gone up. Yeah, $5,000. Because in 2003, the number was like $26,374 for a brand new vehicle. Now, the average new car price, $31,252, which is that comes from three different places. That comes from USA Today, TrueCar.com, and then a place called TheCostOfLiving.com. Now, who knows where they're getting their information? Maybe it's all coming from the same place.
You know,
but that's the average price of a new car in the United States as of August 2013.
That's current.
$31,252, and that's pretty much the generally accepted number. I've heard about $30,000.
And who carries that much money around in cash?
Well,
not most people.
Nah, you don't. You don't typically have that kind of money sitting in a savings account to just be able to say, you know, hand it over. And that's the average price. So there's some a little more, some a little less,
right,
of course. I understand that. And I do know that it happens. It happens, but not as frequently as I think I hear it happen. You know, used cars, I can understand. Like, let's say maybe you saved up money from your previous car.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you were done paying for it, you as you should do, put the money that you would normally put for that payment into a separate account, a savings account. Because this is supposedly what you're supposed to do every month, Ben. When you finish paying off your car, you set up a savings account and you put that money from your payment, your former payment, directly into a savings account. And then when it's time to buy another vehicle in 3 years or whenever your current car breaks down, you'll have a nice hefty down payment, or you're able to pay cash for probably a decent used vehicle, you know, something to get you around town.
Yeah, that's, again, yeah, I hear you emphasizing supposed to do.
I mean, but how many people really do that? Do you know anybody that does that? Because I think once you're free of that car payment, then you say, well, that money's freed up for, I'm going to put this money away, but I'm going to put it away for vacations.
I'll be honest. Yeah, I know some people who do that. As for somebody who intentionally earmarks the money just for a new car, I know only two people who have done that. And one of them, I don't know if she's still doing it or if she just had one stellar moment of behavior.
Sure. Yeah. Set up the account and then it's, you know, got stagnant around $500.
Well, it's like it's just, it's good housekeeping. It's just like how you're supposed to walk around your car and give it an ocular assessment every time before you start it. I imagine that well over what would you say, Scott? Well over 85% of car drivers never do that.
I'm going to go higher than that. I mean, people may look to see if they have four flat tires. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, and that's about it. I mean, and I don't think many people do that. But, yeah, I think it would be generous to say 85%. But
yeah.
Anyways, that's what you're supposed to do with that money. You're supposed to put it away, and supposedly you'll avoid all that, you know, that stress when it's time to really, you know, go out there and search for a new used vehicle or a brand new vehicle.
But most people are having to resort to either used cars or finance.
Financing, exactly right. So I went to Bankrate.com, which is, they have an auto calculator, and you could find these online. You could find a lot of different things. You could find, well, you know what? I'm going to talk about calculators right after this, but I want to tell you this one example. Now, I went to Bankrate.com and found their auto calculator, and I put in a couple of different numbers. Now, I used the average, you know, average price of a car here in the U.S.
Okay,
which is,
so 31,252,
and just the start. Now, I did it with no money down at all the money financed, you know, so a complete finance of the full amount for 48 months, which is pretty typical. And I think the current rate was something like 4.14%, which is
You've got good credit.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. That's another thing. Your credit rating comes and you get a lower rate that way.
But a lot of, new college graduates are learning that for the first time.
Yeah. They end up having to go with the, 8 or 9% rate, you know, instead of the 4.4% or 4.1. So anyways, the full amount financed for 48 months comes out to a whopping $707.60 a month.
Goodness gracious.
And that's the average car, Ben. And 4 years, that seems like that's about an average term for a car payment as well.
Yeah.
If you want to back that down to 36 months, make it even faster.
All right, hit me with it.
At 4%, the price is still $923 a month.
Wow.
For the average car. You're talking about just like the typical family sedan.
Yes, this is not a Rolls Royce.
No, this is like a minivan.
Yeah.
For something like this. I mean, when you, $31,000, I can do this all the time. Like I can look through the paper and I can see something that's, you know, about $31,000. I think, well, maybe that's manageable, you know, with my trade-in and, you know, that's,
a little bit down.
Yeah. I'll put a little bit of money down with whatever I trade my vehicle in for. Yeah. And then, you know, what's my monthly payment going to be? Well, you know, you think $31,000 is not a huge deal, but when you look at a number like $700 or $900 a month
for
3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, then here's the other part of this. You go to like one of these calculators or a tool rather that will tell you what your vehicle is worth, the true market value of your vehicle.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Go to Edmunds or, you know, the Kelley Blue Book or something like that. And you punch in the numbers or you punch in the information for your vehicle. And I did this for my car recently and the numbers were depressing.
Oh no.
It came back like a super low number. It's like, it's worth like less than $5,000, Ben, my car.
Oh man.
And I was thinking all along, like, okay, well, I'll trade my vehicle in for $10,000 and then my payment will be this. And oh no, it's like $5,000 is what the car's worth. So I'm going to have to, you know, pony up another $5,000 cash on top of that to get to these numbers that I found right here. So same information. All that, you know, the percentages and everything are the same.
But with a 10,000 trade in and down combined.
10,000 down. And, and this was just before I knew that mine's only worth five. So with 10,000 down, so you're financing $21,252. Yeah. Your payment for four years is still $481 a month. And if you go to 36 month, which I would prefer to do, because who wouldn't want to get it done?
You
quicker?
Don't want to walk around with a debt chain on.
No. $627 a month is what I'm looking at for an average vehicle with $10,000 down for three years.
Yeah, but think about all the money you could save if you're paying $900 a month because you won't be buying gas. So,
great, good point.
You'll eat less too.
Riding the train, you're going to be eating a lot less.
Yeah. this is okay. So these numbers can seem daunting, and they underline the thing that we were talking about earlier. When we said the bottom line is ultimately, as annoying as it can be to repair a car, it can be much more economically feasible to pay $200 or even $300 a month average in repairs versus $900 a month, not average. $900 a month.
Isn't that scary? I mean, I've been kind of, well, I've never ever bought a brand new car. Not brand new from the factory, you know, nothing like that. I've always been used, you know, a couple of years used. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a sweet spot there, like maybe 2 to 3 years used. Mm-hmm. Vehicle's returned either from a lease or it's returned just because, you know, somebody got tired of driving it after about 3 years.
That's what my family does, yeah.
Yeah, after about 3 years, people are tired of it. So, you know, you strap yourself with a 4-year loan or a 5-year loan, or I saw some that went up to 84 months online, that you're able to get an 84-month lease on a vehicle. That,
wow,
to me seems like a bad deal.
For a lease?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Not a lease. I'm sorry. For a purchase.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, a lease would be worse. Yeah.
That's cartoonishly
so
bad.
There's some important points to remember, though. We're talking about a lot of numbers, and mm-hmm. the numbers can be kind of played around with in a lot of different ways. And the thing that you got to remember is that, you know, you got to think, is it the same price as your monthly car payment would be mm-hmm. for each one? So we talked about that example. Like if you have a $300 a month car payment, we just talked about that. It doesn't sound possible anymore, really.
No, it does. It's tough. It sounds like a different time.
Not really. But I mean, they're saying like if you have a $300 a month car payment versus a $1,200 repair that happens every 4 months.
Right.
Which, oh my gosh, that sounds.
Can you imagine?
Well, I had an Audi that did that to me.
Oh yeah. You were telling me
about that. In 1 year, I had this car, this Audi. It was a 99 Audi A4. Mm-hmm. In 1 year, I had $3,000 repairs on the thing. The maintenance killed me on that car. And by the time I got out of that hole, just barely out of that hole, I wanted nothing more than to trade it and get rid of it. So I traded mm-hmm. it in for less than I probably should have, but I got the car that I have now and I've had it for a long time. So it ended up okay. Mm-hmm. But it was a huge financial hole, and it probably ruined me from ever getting another Audi again. Not because I don't want one, because I loved it.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
I loved it when I had it. It was a great car.
And when it was working
until that final year. But there's no way my wife will even let me get near an Audi dealership at this point.
But you know what, Scott? It was a learning experience.
Yeah,
and speaking of learning experiences.
Learning
experiences. Yeah. Speaking of learning experiences, it reminds me of something that my dad used to say to me when I really, really just found myself in a boondoggle.
Yeah.
He would say, well, that's the price of an education. And then normally, depending on what had happened, I would say, you should have told me something like this before, which usually he did.
Why don't you pass along your wisdom, old man? Is that what you said? Because that wouldn't get you very far, I don't think.
As we return here, Scott, when last we left, we were talking about some other things that we had yet to add to this equation.
Yeah,
right?
We're still talking about numbers. And, you know, we talked about a couple different points here. Now, we said, you know, if the repair is less than a few months' car payment on mm-hmm. a new vehicle, mm-hmm. then, you know, there's a decision to make there. Now, which would be, you know, if it's lower than the cost of a few months, then of course you would do it. And of course, if it's lower than 1 month, obviously you would do it.
Sure.
Now, if the repair is, here's another one, Ben, this is another tricky one. A single big repair. So if the repair is less than half the car's market value, which is huge. So,
right.
You know, I mentioned mine's worth roughly $5,000 at this point, my used
right.
car.
So if you had a $2,400 repair.
And there's a lot of back and forth with, you know, the industry experts on this, you know, that say that, you know, I don't know, should you make a repair that's worth more than half the vehicle, you know, the
right.
vehicle's overall trade-in value?
Yeah.
Some people would say, well, it's an emotional decision on my part because I'm familiar with this vehicle. I know once I make this, it's going to keep it going for another year because I know that everything else is solid. I'm going to make this one repair that is pricey, but I feel that it's going to keep me going for another solid 12 months.
Right.
Then
yeah.
it becomes, then you have to go back to, is it worth 12 months? You know, based on monthly payments.
Right. And so then, and I'm so glad you said that. So, one of the examples, just to take the example that we made of your car, mm-hmm. If we say it's worth $5,000 and it has a, repair cost, let's just say $2,400 for the sake of argument, right? And, you know that $2,400 repair, whatever ungodly massive repair that is, has to,
Doesn't take much.
Yeah, it'll delay the purchase of a different vehicle or another repair for, as you said, 12 months. You average $2,400 out over those 12 months, and it's still less than a car payment once you add insurance and gas.
$200 a month.
Yeah.
And that seems like, well, that's going to be far less than a new car payment would be. So you got to play all these different math games. You got to go through just a lot of, math acrobatics, I guess, in order to
right.
figure out what's it worth to you, really. And you've got to also weigh in with, you know, is it, are other things falling apart on it? You know, can I expect that after I make this payment, I'm going to also have to do this and this? And how much are those going to cost? And I know that it's tough to foresee, you know, any kind of maintenance is coming up. You know, there's general maintenance, like, you know, monthly stuff or you know, stuff that's based on mileage. But what about the stuff that breaks? Mm-hmm. You know, in older cars, things are going to break, and it always happens.
The belt just goes.
Yeah, it just happens. I mean, and, you know, there's other unexpected things that you just don't know. You're going to get a rock through the radiator at some point because you're going to be on the highway a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things like that, you know, may cost you a few hundred here, a few hundred there, but when you add them onto that big repair that you just made, then it becomes, you know, well, if I had known this was going to happen, I would have just traded it in. You know,
right.
I would have made the smart decision and started, you know, start over fresh with a new used vehicle mm-hmm. or a brand new vehicle.
Mm-hmm. I always go for used vehicles too, gently used, couple years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've never bought a brand new vehicle just because I don't care for the depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I'm just, in addition to buying a car, it feels like I would also be handing someone, you know, $5,000.
Well, that's the thing. You gotta think about depreciation as well. I mean, there's a lot of points to think about when you buy a new car, and depreciation is one. Upkeep, there's, you know, the length of ownership, I guess,
mm-hmm.
interest costs and insurance rates, and of course, there's the purchase price, of course, and the monthly payments and all that. But you also have to consider, you know, once you make this repair, how long is that going to get, you know,
exactly.
how long is that going to preserve the life of the vehicle? How long are you able to keep that car on, you know, on life support, I guess.
I hope it's not that drastic.
Well, you know, in some cases it feels like that. You know,
in some cases it does.
Some people are hanging onto a car that has, like mine, it has 157,000 or something like that. And it feels like every time I make a little repair on it, I'm keeping it on life support. You know, how long is it going to last me? Like, well, it's kind of rough condition and I can expect that soon this is going to break, but it's still a lot cheaper than a $600 new car payment for just an average new car.
My car's got 164,000 on it, and I still like it. I love it, as a matter of fact. I know, though, the car and I have an open secret that one day that transmission is just gonna head out.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, I'll have to make that calculation. You know, how worthwhile is it to get a new vehicle, which, you know, might still be a Monte Carlo, as opposed to repairing a transmission on a car that old that high of a mileage.
And then do you take the bargain basement way where you go to some, you know, guy in a barn somewhere and he's got a used one that you're not quite sure about the condition, but it's only $500 to have the thing put in, installed and done. You know,
he says, hey, I don't have the title, but
yeah, it's a little shady deal maybe, but you know, is that worth it then? Do you go to a place where you don't maybe trust the parts as much as if you go to the dealership and have the transmission rebuilt and
right by a certified,
which would cost a lot of money, I understand, but think how long that thing would last. It probably would be like new again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all these different things just away. It's a
let me add another one on here. One of the calculations there, I'm sure some people have already thought about this as you guys were listening to us. But one of the calculations that we haven't hit on yet is the problem of liquidity. So here's how a lot of people with the best of intentions, especially, and I know I sound like an old codger when I say it, especially younger people get caught in car payments that they can't afford over time just because they don't have the liquidity maybe to pay for, let's say, a $900 or even $1,200 repair that would keep their existing car going for a year or more. Since they don't have that lump of cash, then they're saying, okay, I'll go in and I'll get a car and I'll be able to afford it because I'll just be paying $300 a month, which is less. And then, of course, they get pushed up to four in the negotiation process. And they say, okay, four is $100 more than I wanted to pay per month.
But that's doable.
And it's still easier than $1,200 all at once. And what that means is, in the course of 3 months, Scott, they already start paying more money.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess there's a way around this. Maybe, you know, if you talk to, a shop owner, and you're having a big repair like that done, there's a possibility, not always, but there's a possibility that they may finance that repair for you.
Yeah, but you have to know them.
That's an option to look at. I mean, I guess if you're in that position, if you're in that case, because when you're looking at completely getting rid of your vehicle and going to something new, whether it's a new used or new vehicle, that's a different bridge to jump off.
Just a lot of people get pretty messed up over the liquidity problem. So
yeah.
I think that's an excellent point, Scott. We should recommend trying to put I hate to say it this way, but see if you can put a repair on layaway.
And I don't recommend that by any means. You should be able to have something in reserve for something like that, because
right.
if you're just going month to month, you know, just able to make your bills, and then something like this hits, that's a terrible position to be in.
Catastrophic.
Yeah, and I mean, I can speak from experience. I'm now a saver. I save a lot of money, you know, as much as I can for things like this, and it's paid off many, many times. So if I can just offer a little tiny bit of advice, save as much as you can for stuff like this, the unexpected things.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be your car, because what if something comes up with, you know, the house? Let's say the air conditioner goes out on the house.
Yeah. Oh,
and then
yeah.
it's $3,000, you know, and then it's like, well, great. Now I don't have the money for the car payment that I thought I had. You remember that $400 car payment?
Right. Cause I was on that month to month.
Yeah. Because I had just enough to make the $400 car payment. So, you know, life gets in the way, Ben. There's a lot of different things that come up. So I mean, just a tiny bit of advice. We won't do that too much, but I don't mean to preach.
Oh yeah. No. I think it's invaluable advice. And I wish I had heard it earlier, honestly, in a couple of respects. But,
yeah.
One thing that I naturally go to when you bring this up, which is again, a very good point. You said life gets in the way. And that's something that we should mention when we talked about non-quantifiable reasons for people buying a new car.
Yes.
Like what happens when you have that kid? You know, what happens when your family situation changes? What happens when you have a divorce and all of a sudden, you know, the car that you and your spouse shared only goes to one of you?
Mm-hmm.
So this can affect the decision as well.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many different factors that come into play here. But, you know, and a lot of this, now you mentioned change of life. Now, I can't speak to divorce stuff or any of that.
Sure,
when you have to sell your vehicle in order to get half of the price out of it to give to the other person
right,
involved.
Yeah.
But you know, a position where your life changes in some way, like you have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happened with my car. I sold my Honda CRX, which had two seats,
yeah.
to get the Audi, which had four doors and four seats or seating for five, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a great decision, and it lasted me for many, many years past, you know, when I was making a car payment, but then it got very, very expensive, you know, for maintenance.
Yeah, I imagine.
And, you know, I understand it was a good decision to make at the time, but, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to do, and you make decisions like that. You make it based on your life at that moment. So there's also another thing, Ben, there's a kind of a peace of mind that goes along with this. And when you have a kid, you think, well, is my car reliable? Because I'm going to be driving the kid back and forth to daycare or to
soccer,
you know,
school,
the grandparents' house.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be making long trips to, to the coast, I guess, because we're going to take family vacations on the beach or whatever. And I sure don't want to have my family in the car somewhere in the middle of Florida and have the thing break down because, you know, I don't know any mechanics in the area, obviously, and likelihood that you can't repair it on the side of the road, usually.
It's pretty high, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you think, I want something reliable, I want something safe for my family, that you make decisions based on things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that peace of mind, or that just that comfort of knowing that you can get in the car and start it every time that you turn the key, that has something to do with it as well. Because I've had cars before where it's a 50-50 shot if it's going to start in the morning. Or, you know, if I'm going to make it across town to get to my job. But you know you need that job in order to make the money to make the car payment. So,
whoa, what'd you have, like, Schrodinger's ignition?
Yeah, I don't know. It was about like that. I'm talking about, like, you know, some of the older, dodgier cars, I guess. You know, that you're quite, you know, kind of unsure about them.
Yeah.
You know, some that always left you stranded. You know, you just knew that, you know, you better have a phone with you if you go out, or at least the name of a good tow truck company.
Gosh, man. Okay, so let's go ahead and recap. I think that's most of what we got. You got anything else?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe some final advice, maybe, just if that's
yeah.
all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I guess the last advice, I guess, the best thing to do is if you search new car versus old car online, you'll find a lot of different interesting things. And one thing is that we've got a we've got a quiz on our site.
We do. I'm so glad you mentioned this.
Should I repair or replace my car or something like that?
Yeah,
I
think that's the name of it.
Oh, here it is.
Ditch it.
Fix it or ditch it. Is it time to replace your ride? And there's a quiz. It's like a 20-question quiz. But, you know, and it's funny. You think that, well, what's a quiz going to tell me? But there's some good insight in this quiz because our writers put a lot of effort into writing this stuff. And Kristen is the writer of this, Kristen Hall Geisler. And she put a lot of effort into this, and there's some good points here, some things that you may not consider, you know, in the form of questions.
Yeah, it's not fluffy.
No, it's not. It's fun, but it's also not fluffy. You're right. It has some good, solid advice. And also, you can go online and look at calculators. And these are very valuable, I think, to people. And I don't know, Ben, if I'm stepping over something you wanted to cover
great.
Here or
yeah,
not.
Go ahead. Calculators.
Calculators online are maybe one of the best ways to figure all this out, because but they do require a lot of details. You got to know a lot about the vehicle that you're intending to purchase and the vehicle that you have now. And think we're talking about things like, current values and mileage numbers and loan rates and down payment info, licensing fees, taxes. You need to know all that information up front. So you got to look into it ahead of time. But once you do, it will give you a clear picture of whether it's worth it to hang on to your old car or buy a brand new vehicle. And then there's also, we mentioned quiz type, the quiz that we have, but there are quiz programs that will give you a kind of a yes, no, you answer 10 or 12 questions and it'll say, well, here's our recommendation for you because you answered this way.
Right. What's the year of your car? What's the model? What's the mileage?
Yeah. And it'll ask you more about your situation and your expectations out of your vehicle. And it'll say, well, we think you should hang on to your car and make the repairs or we recommend for you a new used vehicle or a new vehicle for you because, these are the things that you want. You know, it's based on your monthly budget or your average miles or, the options that you require, which is kind of funny to me. You require options, but, if you have to have, the heated and cooled seats or whatever, that kind of thing. So, I know it's kind of funny, but there's also lots of advice columns. Now you're listening to us about, we're not really trying to give you advice. Maybe we're just trying
observations.
To, observations is a good way, but there are advice columns out there that will tell you specifics. And you'll find that if you read through these, you'll find a lot of people have exactly the same thing going on as you do. So you can kind of match up with certain, writers or people with questions that say, well, I've got this vehicle and it's kind of doing this now. Is it worth it for me to invest in a new vehicle or a used vehicle or should I just repair it? And you'll find that, somebody has gone through what you've gone through invariably. There's always
Absolutely.
A good example out there. So, those three things, the calculators, the quiz type programs and advice columns are maybe the best places to go.
And to add all of that up under one burning highlighted point. If you remember nothing else from this podcast, just remember this. Consider your decision carefully. Don't just jump in. Okay. I know car commercials are astonishing and really cool. Even when cars involved are kind of ugly.
Yeah.
I know that there's so many people out there stuck driving Honda Odysseys. But the point is that these decisions, in terms of finances, are fairly close to tattoos. They have permanence in your life.
Isn't it like the second largest purchase in your life?
Typically? Yeah, there's a house and
the car is the second largest decision that you'll make monetarily. So, you got to decide, is this the right time for me? And I know it's a very emotional thing for people a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
But it should be more math driven. It should be something that you really, really sit down and figure out and make sure that it's the right decision for you.
And with that, I think, Scott, I propose that we end this podcast with a little bit of math in our listener mail.
Let's do it.
Okay, Scott, Logan writes in, and I know you probably read this one too. Logan writes in to talk about the mid-grade, low-grade, high-grade gasoline.
Oh, boy.
And he said, it's all in perspective. And he said, let me explain why I would say this is an arguable point and it should be left up to the consumer. So Logan's saying that there's something that goes down to somebody's personal choice, right? He said, number one, density of 87 grade is generally significantly less than 93 octane gas and is therefore less energy dense. Two, the octane on 87 grade gasoline is generally an 82.92 or 83.91 RM value, giving you the 87 R plus M divided by 2 value at the pump. And 93 octane gas is generally 87.5 or 98.5, yielding something like 93 R plus M over 2. So assuming the gasoline blends linearly at the pump, you're mixing roughly 60% 87 grade with 40% 93 gauge gas to give you approximately 89 RM over 2 value. And he says, the thing is, gasoline, in reference to the octane number, doesn't blend linearly. So since octane's a measure of the physical property, resistance to detonation upon compression, all these other factors play into this, and therefore it tends not to blend linearly. Since most gas stations are afraid that the gas won't blend this way, or at least the major companies are, they tend to blend above these specifications at the pump, since both streams tend to be wide into each other for mid-grade.
So is he saying we get what we pay for at the pump, or we don't get what we pay for at the pump?
Here's what he's saying. It's great, because this is the part of his letter where he goes, so where am I going with this?
Ah, perfect.
He says, depending on the price point, the 3% increase in price will yield a denser gasoline with better knocking characteristics, generally allowing the ECU to advance timing and decrease the injector load table. Now, he's writing to us from Houston. So in Houston, the price is 87 is around $3.30, and mid-grade's around $3.40. So, you know, that's somewhat comparable to Atlanta, too. So he says, in the long run, this gives you better fuel economy over the 87-octane gas, but it might not be noticeable. So for his, he was driving a Hyundai Accent, and he got 3 miles per gallon better going from regular all the way to premium. And when you think about the mileage savings, that's 36 to 39. So if you want to do this yourself, and he said, of course, every car might be different, so it might not be as much of a cut-and-dried benefit as it's being advertised. Mm. And he...
Well, this kind of goes against a few things that we've learned, right? I mean, I thought we had said that, you know, if a car is rated at 87 octane, that's what you should put in there because that's what the manufacturer recommends, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to jump up to 93, I thought that the idea was that it doesn't quite burn as easily. Now, right. We've also had a few people write in and say, that's not true because of this, this,
yeah,
and they,
yeah,
they
yeah.
send in a lot of, you know, another... huge, you know, email with a lot of chemistry involved in it, and a lot of numbers that there's no way I can recall that right now. But I don't know. It seems like we've always just kind of narrowed it down to the 87 octane stuff burns a little bit easier. The 93 octane stuff is a little bit tougher to burn, requires higher compression, and that's typically the ones that benefit from it. Now you can put it in there; it may have adverse effects. It may not have adverse effects, but typically the higher octane is for higher compression engines.
Right.
Typically.
Yeah, typically. And so we've got it's interesting because we've triggered a lot of listener attention to this idea.
Yeah. It seems like everybody in our audience weighs in on this at some point.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's just an add-on to the end of an email or a complete email about just that topic. But, yeah, everybody has an opinion about the octane rating of fuel.
Right. And so we wanted to give as many perspectives as we could on this. Now, Logan wrote us a fantastic email. Unfortunately, we don't have time to read all of it. But, Scott, I will read the last line. I think you're going to like it.
Okay, hit me with it.
Anyways, take it easy, guys. Also, 20th anniversary Trans Am.
That is a good idea. Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea at all. Because, the 89 was that was the year I graduated. So that one, of course, that's one that I paid attention to because that was the cool car at the time, right?
Yeah.
And, that's a good idea. I like that idea.
Well,
Trans Ams and all that. I mean,
yeah.
The whole lineup, the Firebird, Camaro, we should do something about all of them.
All of them, yeah. Mm-hmm. We should do a whole Trans Am because we've done specific things, but we haven't just done a Trans Am.
No, I don't think we have.
Good idea, Logan. Thank you so much for writing in, and thank you, everybody else, for listening. Let us know how your last repair or replace dilemma went. We're interested in the answer. You can hit us up on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We have our very own website, carstuffshow.com, and you can always send us an email directly. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.